Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Because you made a great point earlier in talking about your experience dealing with bone chips. Now, this, granted, was in the elbow, not the ankle.
Right.
You said that these chips come about as a result of trauma.
Correct.
And what ends up happening is, unless you get rid of the chips and allow the area that is producing the chips to truly, truly heal, all you're going to do is, you take the chips out, but the chips are going to come back, right?
Yeah, well, his is a bone spur, which actually, you know the stalactites.
What's the spur and a chip?
The stalactites and the, what's the one that hangs down from the roof? Is it stalagmite?
This is our question. This is our question presented by Breaks Plus. What hangs down from a cave?
Yeah, is it stalactite? Stalagmite?
It's a stalagmite and a stalacite.
What's that? Yeah. Stalagmite hangs down, and what's the one that comes up?
Well, I know I'm not pronouncing this correctly, so I beg your forgiveness. Stalacites hang down. Stalagmites grow up.
Stalactites.
There's no G in stalactites. Oh, is it? Stalactites and stalagmites?
So the stalactites hang down.
Even though they're not spelled. All right, so stalactites come down. Stalagmites grow up.
Okay, the point is,
what is your point?
The point is,
what are we talking about? I want to dedicate it. Everybody made it. That was actually me being genuinely frustrated. Normally, I like to play along
right,
with it.
I don't.
That was me expressing real frustration. What the heck are we talking about?
Well, either or, they're both connected.
Oh, no.
They're both connected. One's connected to the top of the cave. One's connected to the bottom of the cave.
Right.
So that's what bone spurs. The bone spurs are actually connected. You know what I'm saying? They're connected to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the bone chips float around.
Right.
So they can go anywhere in the joint lining where the bone spur is connected to the bone.
Okay.
So I don't know what you would call a floating stalactite or stalagmite, a stalag float.
Yes.
Yes.
You just made science history.
Right. Exactly.
It's like creating a new element.
Yeah. It's pretty much what I did. Mm-hmm. So, that's where I'm going on that. So, you know, you cut it off, you know, you smooth her down and
that's
then
the spur.
That's the spur. And then you hope that it doesn't, you know, instantly grow back. And they grow back. My experience has been they keep coming back because there's trauma there. It's a response to trauma. That's what a bone spur really is. You know, it's calcification of the joint of an area. And that's, you know, and then it rubs on ligaments or it rubs on muscle structure or whatever, or it rubs inside the joint. So
painful as all get out.
Yeah, yeah. If it's in the joint lining, heck yeah, it hurts like the dickens. How bad does it hurts like the dickens?
I'm not going to do this.
Okay. By the way,
we got Joel Klatt joining us.
You mentioned the 21st day of September. Today is the day after the 21st day of September,
mm-hmm.
which is September 22nd.
Yes.
Correct. You know whose birthday today is?
Actually, my mom's.
Is it your mom's?
Yeah, my mom's birthday today. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Evans. Happy birthday to my granddaughter, Drew Sarah.
No kidding.
Today is her birthday. She is 5 today. She should be.
I will not tell you what my mom is. She would kill me.
She is in the car, headed to school.
Aw.
Happy birthday, Drew. Papa loves you.
Happy birthday, Drew.
Papa loves you, Drew. Have a good day at school today.
Uncle Mike loves you.
Uncle Mike loves you. How about that? Happy birthday. 5 years old. Man, they grow quick. 5 years old. Our little heart warrior, you know, she had open heart surgery right after.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, right after she was born.
She's a little tough little cookie, isn't she?
Oh, she's a tough little nut now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Can you make this quick? I got a meeting.
Okay.
All right.
Leave it to Joel. We're
trying to wish my granddaughter a happy birthday. Here comes Joel in
a bowl
in a china closet.
Yeah, we have a tender moment here, and Joel's like, I don't care. And this is the same guy who once used to walk around the campus at CU with little sleeves of Titleist that he would toss to the golf guys and say, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Courtesy of the football team.
Courtesy of the football team. Hey, hit him straight.
Hit him straight. There you go. Hello, Joel Klatt.
Someone had to pay for the golf balls.
Yeah. That's right. Not your fault,
I mean,
Joel.
Not my fault we paid for them. What do you want me to do?
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I was being nice.
Joel Klatt presented by Audi Flatirons, everybody.
Joel, how are you, buddy? Everything going well?
not easy to do a smooth segue from that. You know what I mean? So
man,
I gotta tell you, I just sometimes I cringe to think about like my dad, whom I respect more than maybe any person on earth. Like if he was ever listening, and he's just like, man, my son is just a Richard Nine when he gets on the radio.
Yeah.
That's all right. I mean, you know what? You do it so well. You do it exceptionally well. Hey, Bradley Chubb, you've had, you know, your share of football injuries, brutal. And now it's his third ACL. Now it's going to be a second ankle surgery, although on a different ankle or whatever it is. Like, expectations for the fifth overall pick, do you think he'll ever kind of live up to the potential of being kind of a generational player?
Well, that's really tough, Mark, because as you know, and you dealt with maybe more than anybody that I can think of, but maybe, I mean, there are some guys that are just China dolls when it comes to like, and this is, it sounds like a knock and it's not, like when it comes to major injuries, they just cannot keep themselves healthy. And then there's a huge difference between little things that you can play through and cleanups and the scope here and there, whether it's elbows, shoulders, wrists, knees, ankles, whatever it is. And then like these bigger injuries, and the bigger injuries become way more problematic because it feels like once they start happening, it's just like a chain and or a domino, I guess maybe is a better analogy. And they just start to fall one by one. So can he or will he ever be that generational player? I think it's going to be hard because remember, he's going to be evaluated, at least in our circles as Bronco fans, as Bronco, you know, watchers, he's going to be evaluated to the Von Miller standard. And Von, I don't want to say single-handedly because that's unfair in the sport, but Von was the best player maybe in the NFL for a year and won a Super Bowl because of it. Like Peyton Manning couldn't throw a ball through a wet paper bag that year. And they win a Super Bowl against the MVP of the league and Cam Newton, in part because he was so dynamic. And so for Chubb, I only talk about that because that's the standard by which we're going to evaluate Bradley Chubb. That's a incredibly difficult standard to live up to, in particular when you look at the lack of history as it relates to modern NFL football and a defense actually going out there and being the catalyst to win a championship. It just doesn't happen often.
How do you look at this 2-0 start?
Cautiously optimistic. They had to be this way, right? If they were 1-1 right now and losing to either of those two teams, you talk about like jumping off of a building. Broncos country would just be incensed. They'd be beside themselves. So they are where they need to be. Having said that, this style of 2-0, fairly dominant, in particular last week, feels a lot better than winning on a last-second field goal in one of those games and still having the same struggles or the same frustrations with quarterback play. This feels better, which is what leads me to be cautiously optimistic. They've got to win again this week because I just don't think the Jets are any good. Their quarterback has miles to go while he's immensely talented. He's got miles to go in his maturation and development into this league. So they're going to have to win probably in a similar fashion for us to continue to put them into the category, at least individually for me, into that cautiously optimistic category. They're in a really tough division. I think Vegas has proved themselves to be much better. We know that the Chargers are going to be very good. And obviously the Kansas City Chiefs, at least until someone beats them on this side of the NFL and the AFC, are the class of the conference.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And Teddy Bridgewater continues to perform at exceptionally high level. And Mike was asking me earlier, like, what do they need to do to kind of make this offense go at its next level? Teddy's been efficient. Teddy's been great. But when you look at the Broncos offense, what's next for this offense? What do they need to do to go from that 23, 24 points into the 30s on a consistent basis?
I actually think it's and while they, you know, with Williams, they ran the ball well. I personally believe that it's becoming more dominant in the run game. When you can run it when you want to, at any moment that you want to, even when they know you want to run the ball, what it does is it opens up things, especially for a quarterback that probably needs the element of play action or the element of a dynamic run game to get the safeties down, right? Teddy's not just going to blow you away with his arm. He's accurate and he's efficient. But I think the next step is actually the dominance in the run game. While they've run it well, I think the dominance is where it comes in. And you were obviously a part of a team with Denver, Mark, that was the most dominant rushing team in the league at the time. And maybe, you know, up to that point, one of the better rushing teams that we'd ever seen in the National Football League. But what came out of that was the entirety of the boot game. And one of the things that Mike did so well back in the day is he dialed up shots off of that boot game, off of that zone action. And how many times did we see John or Jake Plummer, even for that matter, give a hard fake, and it was kind of a half roll into the pocket, and then that's how they would get the ball way downfield. I see it all the time, you know, week in and week out in college football. The teams that are the most explosive teams on offense, it's not just because of their passing game or their talent at wide receiver or their talent at quarterback, although that helps. It's their ability to be dominant in the run game. Because when you're forcing a defense to add a hat into the run game and say that we have to play with a plus box, then you're going to start to get bigger and better and more explosive plays in the passing game. So for me, I'd say that's the next step for them, is not just running it well, not just committing to the run game, but Mark, being able to dominate in that run game.
You know, let me ask you, how important is it to have an identity? Like, I love about my playing time here in Denver and even in Washington. If we get in second down and one, that's not a down to take a shot on the defense. You know, it's not a down to take a deep shot. That was a down to take a shot on the defense. You know what I'm saying? Like, the difference between throwing a shot and actually trying to punish somebody and convert and get four more opportunities with the football, right? That was the mentality. And we get into a second down and one situation, and I knew there's three plays coming in. It's either some 18-19 handoff force, it's 14-15, or it's QB sneak. And so there is a calming factor to me when you have an identity and you know beyond the shadow of a doubt certain situations. I know what's coming in. I know what play's coming in. I know what my responsibility is even before the quarterback says it. Like, how important in your mind is it for a team to have that kind of security and that kind of identity?
Yeah, I think it's vital. I'm going to try to take that a step further, because I don't think it's just about the continuity of having an identity or being on the same page with the play caller. Because I think there's a rhythm to play calling, and everyone would say, like, well, we have a fingerprint, you know. But I think what you're talking about is something a little bit different than a fingerprint. And what you're talking about is that fingerprint being something that will be successful. So you say to me, like, in those eras, you knew what was coming in. What, there was a calming factor in that.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue it wasn't just that you knew what was coming in, but that you knew it would be successful.
Right.
So that's the part where it goes from a fingerprint to an identity. And what your identity is something that you can lean on, and then you can start to break the will of the opponent. When you're breaking the will of the opponent, these are all like very like coach speaky type of terms. We talk about football being a sport of will, and you have to lean on your opponent, and you have to break their will. Part of breaking their will is what you're talking about, is that when everybody knows what's coming, they still can't stop it. That's the calming effect of knowing that the force play is coming in, the zone play is coming in. You know, if you take it to college football and you go back to like the Stanford heyday, you know, power's coming in. You're going to run a gap scheme and there's not enough defenders on the field. They can put 14 guys out there. You're going to get the second and two. Like it's the confidence in the identity that gives teams the ability to go break the will of their opponent. And I think that that's vital. And I think that every single great team has that ability. Now, it's not always a physical ability when it comes to run game and leaning and the offensive line. It's also the identity could be in the ability of your quarterback in the passing game, in particular in the short passing game, to just know that you're going to be better than them. And we've seen that with Brady for how many years? So it's the ability of the defense to say, you know, we're coming after you and we're still going to get there. There's no amount of max protection that you can have. It's the ability to say, we're going to run man defense because we know you can't succeed and you do too. So I think that there's, you know, layers upon layers of what you're talking about within identity and confidence and continuity. And it's not just about knowing what's going to come in, but knowing it will be successful.
Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox, presented by Audi Flatirons. Let's talk a little college football. Let's talk about your Buffs. The season began with high expectations. Is it inconceivable to you that a school that plays in a Power 5 conference can go out in back-to-back weeks in an age in which college football is on steroids offensively and score a grand total of 7 points?
I mean, no, because, like, we did that when I played there. So I think we scored a grand total of 6 points across two games.
Really?
So, yeah, Mike, listen, don't act so surprised with that smug look. I know he's got a smug look.
Quarterback issues.
Like, I'm just, yeah, jeez. I was the quarterback of that team.
Oh,
wasn't good.
Play
now,
caller,
one of those
bad play caller. Had to be the play calling. The scheme.
Well,
no identity.
Clearly.
Yes.
Clearly, we had no identity. We couldn't lean on people up front. Our quarterback made poor decisions. That was me. And one of those teams that we played happened to be the 05 Texas team with Vince Young that had ridiculous defense. Two Thorpe Award winners, a Buckus winner. I mean, they concussed me twice. Don't remember the second game very well, if at all. It was a fun time. Fun time. Now, having said that, yeah, this is a problem for Colorado because, you know, what's going to start to happen, and I think that you started to see it a little bit last week, is that the defense plays well or at times well enough to win, and then they realize that, like, hey, man, it doesn't matter. You know, we can hold this team to 17. We can hold this team to 13, 20, whatever it is. And it's not going to matter because our offense can't do anything. And that's a serious problem. So in this day and age, man, although I will tell you that this is an odd year in college football. Now, let me just take a minor tangent, if you will. And I'm going to do this because Minnesota, I've seen them this year and they are littered with this player, but the super senior has made this an incredibly weird year in college football, and it's a deeper year in college football. There's more parity because there's more older players, and there's more older players at specific places like Minnesota. They are littered with 6-year players. When I did their game against Ohio State, I counted like 11 guys on their defensive two deep that were either transfers or 6-year players, and both of those categories shouldn't be on your roster. 11 in the two deep. They had another 8 on their offensive two deep that were either, again, transfers or 6th-year players. Because of the eligibility rules with COVID, you know, that's a team that was going to be tough. So, listen, Colorado's got to get better, man, and I hope that they can. Because certainly they're going to have to figure something out offensively to go in the right direction.
I got to take a pause real quick, and my granddaughter wasn't in the car, so can we wish Drew Sarah, lovely Drew
Sarah. At the risk of upsetting Joel, but sure.
Yes.
I know.
Five years old, Joel. She's five today. Can you believe it?
Listen, happy birthday.
Yes.
I'm so happy for you. And here's the deal, Mike. We know the Schlereth family so well, and so anything we can do for them is amazing.
Little Drew, 5 years old, hard to believe. So congratulations. I love
happy
you.
Birthday,
Popo
Drew.
Loves you, Drew. Happy birthday, sweetheart. But now we're going to talk, football, honey. So, we're going to move on from that. Okay. We're going to keep talking about football. Hey, real quick, just as you look at the Broncos as a whole, the football team, I know you said cautiously optimistic, but here we are with some injury issues. Leaning on this defense, now all of a sudden Bradley Chubb's going to be gone for some time. Josie Jewell is out, who's a really good football player. I think he's a really good football player, which sounds like almost a backhanded compliment, right? He's not special, but he's really, really good. Darby out right now. Obviously, PS2 filled in admirably and got his first pick of the season. But bottom line is, what are your expectations for this defense as it's trying to get through this time with those injuries?
Well, they've got to go out and play well this week. I think that injuries are going to happen, and they're going to be hitting teams all over the league, and I just don't think you can focus on that. Is that too coach speak? But I don't know. I felt that way as a player, Mark, but like, you can't focus on that. Now, will they be as dominant? Probably not. Do you have to find a way to succeed? Absolutely. I mean, so I hope that at least this week there's not too much of a dip, and I would still expect them to go out there and play great defense and dominate. And maybe this is something where they've got to be a bit more complimentary on the offensive side, which again leans into that run game. One guy I do want to give a huge shout out, by the way, and I don't know if we've talked about him a lot, but Javonte Williams. I don't know if you guys have been talking about him a lot or not, but I think that this guy has potential to be a really special running back, which goes into the point that we're making about the health of this defense. If you've got to protect your defense at moments during the season, and maybe this is one of those weeks, I think that the run game, again, establishing dominance in order to get explosive plays, but also to protect your defense, and a guy in Williams. I had a long conversation with Jeff Hafley, the head coach at Boston College, last year in the offseason. And he said when he was facing North Carolina, he said, kind of stupidly, I guess is okay to say, started throwing the ball because they thought Sam Howell was really good, and they stopped giving the ball to Javonte Williams. And he was just like a big sigh of relief because he was like, Javonte Williams was the best football player we played last year. And they played Clemson. They played Travis Etienne. They played Trevor Lawrence. So for my money, I think that a guy like Williams is a guy that can and will continue to get better and maybe be someone that they can lean on to help protect that defense. Because as we all know, defending 50 snaps rather than 60 is going to behoove a defense that is getting thin based on injury.
Yeah, you know, I said it to Mike at the beginning of the week. I'm not so sure that actually, I'm pretty sure that eventually he needs to get the lion's share of the carries. He is a three-down back, great in protection, really understands the game, and he's a physical. I mean, he's a mismatch. So I'm with you on that. I'm glad somebody else sees
it. I thought he was better than Melvin last week.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's way too obvious, but I think he's absolutely the guy that needs to start getting that number one slot.
We started with golf. I'll finish with golf. U.S. going to win the Ryder Cup?
They better. Can we please get a Brooksy DeChambeau pairing at some point this week? That would just be that would be awesome. I'm actually going to be in Chicago. We're going to do Wisconsin Notre Dame in Soldier Field on Saturday.
Oh, cool!
And I'm going to visit. I'm actually going to leave this afternoon. I'm going to go visit Notre Dame tomorrow. And so Friday's a little bit of an off day. And I'm like, you know, it's not that far from Wisconsin. I can drive up on Friday.
Sure.
And check out one of the sessions, right?
Yeah. Are you Team Brooks or Team Bryson?
Are we serious with that question? Is anyone Team Bryson?
Yeah,
what?
Nobody.
Like,
I don't even think Bryson's parents are Team Bryson.
See, I would think that Bryson is enough of a Richard Nine that you would be somehow drawn to him.
That is just You've never said anything that has infuriated me more, Mike.
Or more hurtful, apparently.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
but I got a chance to meet both of them at the U.S. Open a few years ago at Pebble Beach. And, let's just say I'm staunchly in the Brooksy category.
Huh, okay. Brooksy's got some Richard in him, too. Hey, Joel, thanks, buddy. Yes, we appreciate you.
But it's the good type of Richard.
Yes, you're right. You're welcome. There you go. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flat Irons. As always, a lot to unpack in our visit with Joel. We'll do that. Coming up next, Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
I will give you credit and Joel Klatt credit, because I know you guys didn't speak before we did our visit with Joel, but both of you had the same answer to my question, how do you get more out of this offense? And both of you said, you've got to be able to establish your running game in such a way that you're then able to produce the big shots, the big shot plays, the big explosives off that running game.
Correct. I think the other thing that Joel said that I've always been a believer in, and I've said it many times myself, is you have to be able to run the football in predictable situations where you know you're going to run it, and the defense knows you're going to run it, and there's still nothing you can do about it.
That was you guys in your heyday. You had, what, six plays?
Yeah, here we come.
Yeah.
You know, we're like the monkeys. Here we come, walking down the street. Get the fun. Every time, hey, we're the monkeys. Yeah, I mean, we're just coming. Yeah, we're just rolling, Mike. We're rolling downhill. Bunch of trained SEALs. You ever think about training SEALs? Whose job is it to train a SEAL?
Hey, what the heck? Let's go down this road. Think you could train a SEAL?
I mean, do I think I could train a SEAL? How easy or how hard would that be?
What do you think goes into training a SEAL?
I think it's fish. Think about it. You say, hey, clap your little SEAL feet. You know, he claps his little SEAL feet. You give him a piece of fish. I mean, he's a SEAL. What else? That's all he wants is a piece of fish. He's not thinking about anything else. He's not thinking about, what's my motivation to be a SEAL today? No, he's just like, with his whiskers, going, I'm a SEAL. Clap your SEAL feet. He claps his SEAL feet, you give him a piece of fish. And we're the morons that pay tickets to go watch it. You go pay a ticket to go watch a SEAL be a SEAL.
When all you have to do is actually just have a bucket of fish and you can go up to any old SEAL and get him to do his own private show for you?
Right.
Because you're giving
him
fish.
It's like your own little private dancer.
Right.
Right? It's like having Tina Turner right there with you. And you just say, hey, perform, SEAL. And then you dangle a piece of fish. That thing is going to perform.
God, you make it so easy.
So simple.
So simple.
It really is.
The more you know.
Yeah.
The more you know. Okay, back to this running game.
Okay, great.
So it's as simple as committing to the run and drawing up some cool plays? Is that as simple as it is? It's that simple? Like training a SEAL? It's that simple?
No, it's not.
Why isn't it simple?
Because it's technical. That is, there is a technique that has to be operated, that has to be used, that has to be worked on, that has to be honed. That craft has to be honed. And so it's the issue that a lot of teams get into is they don't have a staple of things that they do and that they work on all the time. And then you have the things that play off that staple. So one of the things that when I'm consulting with teams, I'm always telling them, like, how do you create your adjunct? Like, what's your base? What do you want to be? And how do you create the adjunct off your base? And how do you make it all look the same, identical, right? So you want certain techniques to tie together. So the backside of a tight zone. I want my tackle and my guard on the backside of a tight zone. If you're blocking a three technique, a defensive tackle, outside shade of the guard. I want that technique, footwork-wise, hat placement, hands, everything, to look identical to the front side if we're running power. And so then, when I'm actually doing individual, I'm saying to my guys, hey, man, run this. We're going to work on this double-team technique. Run this just like the backside of zone handoff or the front side of power. Same damn thing. So you get them playing one thing. So if I'm running a bunch of backside of zone read stuff, right? And this guy's playing it three, four, five times, and he's squeezing. He's trying to maintain that B gap. He's shoving that guard down inside, but he's maintaining his leverage point. And then all of a sudden we run power, and that guy does the same technique. We wash him six gaps beyond where he's supposed to be, and he almost blocks himself because he's so used to defending the other thing. And so when you can have that level of understanding and that level of technique, and you can do things that look identical to one another, and that's when you start humming, man.
So that's
when
something
things get exciting.
You rave about. You're a big fan of Kyle Shanahan, no doubt about
sure.
it. And you've talked about this a lot, both on the air and with me off air, about how good he is at going before his team and saying, look, trust me, you do this in the first quarter, second quarter, we are going to get, I promise you, an explosive play on this in the third quarter or fourth quarter. And, you know, it always seems to happen. It's there. Now, maybe they don't execute it, but the play is there,
yeah.
as promised.
Correct.
That's what you, am I right? This is what you'd like to see more out of this offense.
Yes. And to really, like, to really get that. So
to the point where after you complete it, Teddy Bridgewater's running down the sideline and he's pointing over the sideline like, we got him. Just like you said, pointing at the at Shermer like, you got it.
You got him.
That's the one.
So to really be effective in that, Mike, you have to show people, I call it being a play repeater. You have to show people same look, same, you know, same execution, same formation, same personnel grouping. You got to run a play two or three times off of it, right? And then all of a sudden, the third time you get into it, they're all playing that play, and now we got them. And one of the consulting jobs I got was because I asked a question in a meeting, in a production meeting. My question was, what did you think of your goal line? Coach said, oh, I really liked it. Really liked what we did. I liked our plan. You know, I mean, we were down there 12 times. We scored one touchdown, and we got shut down in 11 straight plays. Why do you ask? I was like, I just was wondering what you thought of it. No, why'd you ask? Why you ask? I go, listen, it doesn't matter. Let's move on. No, seriously, why'd you ask? I go, because it stunk. And he's like, well, why? You know, then he's like, well, why does it stink? I go, because.
Like a slap in the face.
Right, because you lined up and you lined up 12 times. You lined up and did 12 completely different things. So you never made the defense have to say, we got to stop this. We got to stop this. We got to stop this. So none of your stuff, every time they lined up, they had a different check. They had a different look. They had a different, whatever their meetings were, they went through meetings too.
Right.
And I go, so you never, it's like a pitcher who says, man, I'm an exceptional pitcher, but each one of my pitches, my fastball, my curveball, my slider, they all come from a different arm angle. Well, as a hitter, you know what you're going to do? You're going to bat 500 against the guy, regardless how good his stuff is, because you know what's coming. Thank you.
So this coach was, like, genuinely shocked at
my take?
Your take.
Yeah, and then he hired me.
And this is the NFL coach.
Yeah.
See, I guess a lot of people out there who are football fans are just – we are so guilty of.
Well, we want to
overrate. Boy, do we overrate these guys?
Well, we want.
Do we overrate the intelligence of these guys?
We want to innovate. We want to be innovators. We want to show everybody how smart we are.
These are supposed to be the best in the world.
It doesn't work that. Why does eight guys get fired every year?
How did he even get to this position? I know that's a whole other conversation, but when you're supposedly one of the best
they're
in the
not
world,
all,
and you, have
they're
a
not
job,
all created equal.
And you have a job that only 32 people in the world have, and you walk in on a production meeting and literally throw the coach for a loop where he's like, damn, you're right.
Right.
Our plan sucks.
But, you know, the issue is, though, and I know we got to go, but the issue is you are so innovative, Mike, and you're so smart, and you know what you're doing. And so you're like, oh, I got him here, I got him here, I got him here because of what they play. But you never, you know, you're calling plays not on offense.
Right.
And a lot of guys get caught up into that. So, you know, for whatever that's worth.
Okay.
Okay.
We will really start to turn our focus to the Jets. Mark has seen a lot of Jets tape this week as he prepares for his Patriots-Saints game. What's he seen from New York? That's next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Stink loves grinding through tape. And you've been preparing for the Patriots-Saints broadcast.
Indeed I am.
And you know a lot of Saints. You've done a lot of Saints games over the last few years.
Sure.
This is your first Patriots game. So in the process of studying the Patriots, you've taken a long look at their game last week against the Jets. So for all of us who are dismissing the Jets, just a mere speed bump along their way to 3-0, why should we maybe take them a little bit more seriously?
Well, as Joel said about their young quarterback,
struggling,
unbelievably talented, Mike. I mean, athletically gifted, great arm talent. He is, you know, he's a really talented young player. And they've got, you know, they've got Corey Davis was formerly of the Tennessee Titans. He's like the fifth overall pick at wide receiver. They've got some talent. Don't get me wrong. They've been a mess up front. They have not done a great job from a protection standpoint. You know, they've got some talent, but I still think that they're not have a lot to be desired on the offensive side of the ball. But I'm telling you, on the defensive side of the ball, Shaq Lawson is playing really good football. A former first rounder who had some injury issues in Buffalo. Quinnen Williams is big, fast, athletic guy inside. CJ Mosley playing really good football. They're starting a lot of young guys. They're starting a lot of rookies. But defensively, when you put them on film, Mike, they fly around, they hit. You know, one thing about Robert Saleh that I've always been impressed about is the connection he has with his players, the way he gets them to play for him, and the belief in keep it simple, stupid philosophy. They're going to play, the majority of what they're going to do is they're going to play one defense, and they're going to play it extremely well. Extremely well. And so, you know, it's you're going to see it. Like, you're going to know what you're getting, but they're going to execute that well. And I think that's what they do. I think that's what they do really well, is they really execute on that side of the ball, tackle well, fly to the football, hit you. And they are a physical group on that side of the ball.
Small sample size, but they are ninth overall in total defense in the NFL, allowing about 22 points per game. Broncos, by comparison, third overall in total defense. Allowing 13 points per game. So, yeah, this is a team that should be able to play some defense. I guess, to me, the question is, Wilson threw those four picks. Is that the kind of performance that you can shake off one week to the next? Or is that one that's going to linger for a while?
No, I mean, if you look at all those picks, I mean, to me, they've got one over route, you know, kind of over like a basic almost that they're in man coverage and the receiver essentially stops. So Wilson tries to throw back shoulder to him in the middle of the football field. And, you know, there's this old saying, if you're getting man coverage, look and book. I mean, and look at your quarterback and just run across the field, right? Because you're in man. Well, he stopped. You're not sitting in zone. You're not finding a hole. So, you know, I always tell you, Mike, that I talked to a coach who said about 65-70% of the interceptions are really receivers' faults.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just like, what are you doing? What are you sitting down against man coverage for? So he throws it. He tries to back shoulder him. And the when he sat down, the guy who's covering him actually sat down and turned his head, and it was right in his hands.
So how many of the four were not his fault?
Well, that one to me was, you know, a bad choice by the, it was a bad choice by him. So he's got fault in it because he shouldn't have thrown it there. You know, you're like, if you're the moron that's throwing it to the moron who's sitting down against man, then you know what? Shame on you. There were two other ones that were really, you're trying to make up for the first interception you threw by trying to make a big play instead of taking what the defense has given you. And there were several of those situations that happened. But again, you're the trigger man.
Mm-hmm.
You're writing all those checks. You know, you're endorsing them. And so you got to quit endorsing them.
Well,
but I think they're very coachable. Like they're fixable from a coaching standpoint.
If there's any benefit of going through the Drew Lock experience, if there's any benefit is that, we know the things to look for now in every young quarterback we come across, right? Does he lock on to the first receiver?
Right.
Does he go front side, back side? Can he read protection? All those things that we've dissected with Drew, you know, it's very easy now to apply to all these young quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, and I think part of it for him is he's under duress. It's not that he doesn't understand the protection. It's just he's running for his life half the time. So I think the kid is exceptionally talented. I think there's a lot of growth there, but you can't score 14 points on one throw. You know what I mean?
Yesterday was the 21st of September, a monumental day. Today is the 22nd of September, a monumental day because of what happened 14 years ago on this day.
Okay, I thought you were going to say because it's my granddaughter's birthday, but no.
Other than happy birthday, Drew. Happy birthday to my mom. But
yes,
14 years ago today, the famous, here it is, you're welcome, the famous Mike Gundy rant.
If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother of children. I think this is worth reading. Let me tell you why I'm talking about this article. Three-fourths of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. And this article embarrasses me to be involved with athletics tremendously. And that article had to have been written by a person that doesn't have a child and has never had a child that's had their heart broken and come home upset and had to deal with the child when he is upset and kick a person when he's down. Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete. And he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. If you have a child someday, you'll understand how it feels. But you obviously don't have a child. I do. If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat and he comes home crying to his mom, you'd understand. But you haven't had that. But someday you will. And when your child comes home, you'll understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared. That ain't true. And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true. So get your facts straight. And I hope someday you have a child and somebody downgrades them and belittles them and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what? It's okay. They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me? That's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
I'd forgotten how great that is.
That is great.
We got... We counted it. There's six drops that we use from that. There's six. But the whole rant? Oh, that's fantastic. 14 years ago today. All right, we're done. Good job, everybody. Thank you for the text. Great job. Appreciate the listeners. Benny, good job. Mark, have a great day. Chad and Nate coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.